Hi, I'm Sabrina Soto. I believe the best conversations are with friends who are really able to open themselves up and share their lives, both the good parts and the bad. You're going to be listening to some of those candid conversations and hopefully gaining some insight to help you redesign your life from the inside out.
Thank you for coming in. Carolina, I read your book last year and I was on this journey of being sober curious. And I'm sure you hear this from a lot of people, but as soon as I became curious, it was like I had this avalanche of information that was coming. And your book was one of the books that I read that I absolutely loved. I love that you were so friendly about it. And just like my friend who's going through the same thing, and I could completely feel like so many similarities in our stories. And I have a feeling there's probably a ton of different people out there that are sober curious, especially now with Dry January. I started Dry January last year and it just ended up sticking. And what ended up happening for me was, it's kind of like when you buy a new car. Let's say you buy a Honda Civic and then all of a sudden you keep seeing Honda Civics everywhere. It's like I started attracting more and more books and people and questions. So why don't you tell my listeners a little bit about your story, why you started Euphoric and your book too, and just the whole path that led you here.
Absolutely, Sabrina. So thank you so much for having me on the show. And say that coming to be alcohol free and running a business and writing a book and all of these things that I do now, like, would never have entertained my consciousness before. I started drinking like most people in college and really just totally party lifestyle, totally overdid it then. But as I got older, especially into my mid to late 20s, what really happened is I settled down. I got a career, you know, I bought a house, I got married, all these things. And I really started adopting what I call the healthy lifestyle. And so I would drink green juice, I would meditate, I would work out. And this was my life Monday through Thursday. So Monday through Thursday, I'm the epitome of health, right? But alcohol still features a part of my life. It features a part of my life for social occasions, you know, restaurants. I like to drink wine at home with movies, all the things. And so every weekend, alcohol is a big role in my life, which means that Monday morning, every single week, I feel like crap. Not only do I feel physically off, do I feel groggy and tired, but I also feel really emotionally low. Like, I just felt like depleted on Mondays, just kind of like my emotions were wiped out and stolen from me. And I kind of wanted to take a break for such a long time, but I would look out on the week and I'd be like, you know what? On Friday, I have this networking event, or on Saturday, I'm going to this wedding. How could I possibly do that? And I didn't really give myself permission to be able to just go alcohol free or not drink alcohol without it meaning something bad about me. And back then I thought it meant like, well, I'm an alcoholic and I have to go to AA meetings and all this crap. But it was actually Dry January that really changed my worldview, because here was this opportunity to take a break from alcohol without having to really explain it to anyone. I didn't have to go tell everyone I had a problem or something. And so I give myself the opportunity to do it. I do the full month of Dry January, you know, 5 years ago, and I fell in love. Like, I fell in love with how I felt. I fell in love with how much deeper my sleep was. I fell in love with how much self-love and pride I felt every day in the mornings. I fell in love with how much happier I was becoming, how much easier it was to stick to my health and wellness. It just felt so good. And February comes around and I still don't really believe that I can be a normal adult who doesn't drink. Like, I still have to go to social events and I still have all this stuff. So I drink a few times in February. And it sucks. It sucks. Like, a few drinks ruins my mood. It ruins my sleep. I get cranky, frustrated. And I really start to recognize that maybe this alcohol thing isn't this luxury, glamorous, feel-good experience that I thought it was. And so I start to take another break at that point, which basically morphed into 5 years later being alcohol-free. And ever since then, I've pushed the limits of what's possible for me. I recognized why I was really drinking, and I've really gone after dreams that I never thought were possible to find the ultimate fulfillment that I think I was looking for in a glass. And so I like changed my jobs. I quit my job. I launched a business. I wrote a book. I travel now all around the world and lead retreats. And I'm really living the things and doing the things I always wished I was, but I didn't have the courage to do. And I completely attribute that to going alcohol free.
Okay. So, but what about people who are still drinking? Because I do feel like once the alcohol was removed from my life, And there was no, you know, especially for dry January, it was like, no, this is, there is no just one. Or it was like, no, I'm doing this for the whole dry January. Things started happening in my life. So there was a sort of manifestation magic that was also happening at the same time. So what do you attribute that to?
Okay, awesome. I love it. So I think that there's this incredible blessings or gifts, I say, of going alcohol free. And the way I talk about it in my book and Euphoric, as you mentioned, I talk about it in the relation of body, mind, and soul, right? So body, we can kind of intuitively guess what that is. You know, when you're not drinking a toxin that your body has to detoxify and it does a whole toll on all the organs of your body, like you're going to wake up feeling more rested. You're going to have so many things healing on the inside that the natural result is more energy or more enthusiasm. You know, like if I drank even one glass of wine the night before, the next morning was not me waking up feeling like a million bucks. I probably right. didn't sleep as well. Like I feel a little groggy. I feel it, right? And so like I don't wake up on the wrong side of the bed as often, at least anymore, right? Like I wake up with that energy and enthusiasm. So I think there's that energy and enthusiasm that comes. I think there's a whole mindset process too of like not breaking promises to yourself, you know, like really looking out for the future version of you, which is, I think, really what self-love is all about. It's you today looking out for the future version of you so that when the future version of you wakes up, she feels loved and she feels supported by the past version of you. And so there's that self-love that comes from it. There's a lot of even confidence that comes because most people don't not drink for that long, right? Like other than a pregnancy in normal culture, we drink from the moment we're 18 until the moment we die, right?
That's absolutely right. The only other time that I, by the way, anybody listening, I, of course, like always, there's gardeners outside. So my apologies for if you hear that in the recording, but yes, it's true. It's like, that was the only long duration of time that I didn't drink was when I was pregnant with Olivia.
Yeah. And so most people don't even get to try it, don't even get to experience what it feels like to not have alcohol in their life as adults. And so I think when you go like 1 weekend, 2 weekend, 3 weekends, 5 weeks, 10 weeks without alcohol, all of a sudden you're like, holy shit, like I never thought I could do this. This is amazing. Like most people won't even do it on the planet. And you start to feel like a badass. You start to feel like superwoman. And I think that confidence starts to spill over into other areas of your life. You know, like I never thought I could be an entrepreneur. But when I started taking a break from alcohol, I was like, wait a minute, if I could do this, then what else could I do? So we have like energy, we have self-love, we have confidence. I think courage is a huge byproduct too, because when you go alcohol-free, you are going the road less traveled. You have to tell friends about it. You have to order mocktails or other drinks at a bar or restaurant. Like it takes a lot of courage to wear it with pride, right? And I think that
Absolutely.
That courage muscle gets worked out so that when you go after what you really want in life, that's also going to take some courage, right? To leave an yeah. unfulfilling job or whatnot. And so it's like all these gifts, it's like all these lessons, I would say, that the universe is presenting you with that you get to do when you go alcohol free, that build up these beautiful skills and talents of yourself that just alchemize together to then, like you said, manifest that next incredible opportunity or action step or beautiful thing that you want to go for in your life. And you have like the drive and gumption to really go for it properly instead of sitting in the indecision or fear or doubt that alcohol literally chemically actually produces those thoughts and feelings in our brain, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And what you were saying is like when you would go a few days and you would introduce it, I was also reading how it takes your body basically 72 hours to purge. So if you are even just saying, oh, I'm just going to drink on the weekends, it's like really you're never giving your body a break because you're putting the toxins in. Then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, perhaps it's detoxing, then right back to feeling really bad again. And another thing, I used to live in New York City, and New York City was a much bigger drinking culture because you didn't have to drink and drive. You were just like bar hopping all around. And I used to drink heavily. And yes, I was much younger, but I don't remember feeling as bad as I do now. If the wine hits my system, it's like I feel super anxious. And I also thought, Carolina, that I suffer from anxiety until I went that extended like period of time. And I'm like, where's the anxiety now? Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so uncanny because like most Americans have no idea, you know, like alcohol really not only takes a toll on your body, and especially as we get older, I think I read that it's like 1 hour to detox a drink if you're 18, and many, many more, if not even days, to detox when you're older, right? When you're in your 40s, 50s, 60s. So it's just obviously our bodies change as we get older, our response level to alcohol. And that's why it was so easier to just overdrink when we were younger. But it's an amazing thing that our bodies are doing that, because our bodies are guiding us to what's going to be aligned with our values and our deeper dreams. And they're little messengers for us to listen to, right? And at the same time, you know, anxiety, most people have no idea. We think alcohol relaxes us. Most people drink at the end of the day because they want this relaxing break from their work, where really alcohol is actually releasing cortisol in your body. Like, alcohol biologically does not relax a human body. And yet we have this myth in our mind that it does. And I think just recognizing that by taking a break and seeing, wait a minute, my anxiety is going so much down, it can be so eye-opening, you know? Alcohol also lowers a lot of our happiness neurotransmitters. So for me personally, I wasn't like a sad person, I wouldn't say. Like, I drank because I wanted to feel, have more fun, have more excitement. It was like, ooh, it's Friday, let's have drinks. I wasn't thinking I was drinking out of like sadness or, you know, things going wrong. And yet alcohol actually lowers our receptivity to dopamine. It lowers our GABA and our serotonin levels. So what a paradox. Here I am drinking because I thought it'd make me feel better on a Friday night, when really all I'm doing is lowering my mood and my baseline throughout all of the week, right? And that's why my book is called Euphoric. That's how I felt to kick alcohol to the curb.
But what called you to make that change? Did something slap you across the face? Was there like one incident? Like, what made you go, hey, I'm going to try Dry January after never doing it before?
Absolutely. I don't think there was an incident. And so like, there's a lot of people who have that like shocking thing that happens that really wakes them up. What I would say is that it was a journey of years of getting more and more introspective, intuitive, and mindful. And so I started listening to myself more and more instead of brushing things under a rug. And that's why I say, like, I don't care if someone drinks 10 drinks a day or one drink a week, if it's out of alignment with their values, it's not going to make them feel happy, right? And if your values are health or mindfulness or connection or spirituality, and alcohol is not allowing you to live up to those values, it's not going to feel good. You know what I mean? And I think I honestly really truly believe this. It's the most intuitive women who decide to reevaluate alcohol, because otherwise what we're doing is we're doing what everyone else is doing and we don't question. Yep.
You're absolutely right. So for people that are thinking, and by the way, if anyone's listening right now, it is not too late to do Dry January. Don't give me that BS like, oh, you know what? It's already, you know, first week, forget it. It's still not too late to try Dry January, because you could even just do it for 21 days. Or if you're listening to this later, do it for, you know, however time, and you can go into February. But for those people that are, there is such a connection to socializing and drinking. What do you say to those people? Like, especially when it's a new relationship, when there's a new friendship, especially coworkers, you're at work and everybody's like, let's go to happy hour, or let's, you know, meet for a drink. It's like, oh God, I want to connect with that person so bad, but I don't want to partake. What advice can you give those people?
Absolutely. And I think recognizing that this habit is such a cultural norm, and it's been kind of placed on all of us unless you grew up under a rug. That's why, like, I don't think it's anyone's fault or, you know, really issue that they grow up drinking alcohol. It's because, like, this is what society told us to do. You know what I mean? And it's so baked into every institution. If it's 5 p.m. on any social thing, there's going to be alcohol involved, right? Like, that's just the way it works. And so first of all, there's kind of like a rebelliousness that I think needs to come in to see through that BS, to be like, wait a minute, this is not how I want society to function. This is not how I want to live my social life. And just because the alcohol industry, which makes $253 billion a year, wants us to be drinking at every, you know, opportunity we have, like, I'm not going to buy into that. Obviously, that's kind of like a personal stance to have. But I think when you're actually in the situation, how to navigate it is, you know, like, 60% of people, and I think that the percentage is increasing because people are just becoming more honest, 60% of people overdrink. So 60% of drinkers are overdrinking way above the health guidelines and have a complicated relationship with alcohol. In addition to that, over 52% of Americans have actually reported that they wish that they drank less or not at all. So the likelihood that you're going out with someone who falls into the majority, like I just mentioned, is really high. Like, they actually probably wish that they weren't drinking as much or not at every single occasion. And so I think sometimes we need to switch it around. Instead of seeing yourself as the odd one out or the outcast or the one who doesn't belong, switch it up and think of yourself as the leader, as the inspirer, as the role model, as the one who's going to create ripple effects. And the thing is, it takes a lot of permission and boldness to stand up to the alcohol-free lifestyle because it feels best for you and not what other people expect of you. I mean, this is people-pleasing 101, right? Like every time you do something for someone else because it's what they want, you're not going to feel good about yourself.
And so I didn't realize what a fan. I didn't realize what a people-pleaser I was. I actually have lived the last 46 years on this earth thinking like, I'm such a badass. I don't care what people think. And Carolina, like now I'm like, oh my God, I do so much of stuff that I don't want to do just to make other people happy.
Yeah. Right. And it doesn't feel good with drinking. And imagine too, that the other person might be doing the same thing. Like deep down. Okay. Deep down, all of us want to be healthier, right? Like deep down, that's like kind of a desire we all have. And if alcohol doesn't make us feel healthier, why can't we just assume that most people in the moment they might enjoy drinking, but nobody wakes up feeling like $1 million after drinking. I'm sorry. There's nobody on this planet who can and does that, right? And so thinking that like you're the leader and that you're also by your actions, potentially giving permission to other people to stand up for their values too, can really change how you see it. And I often like to say like, think like a vegetarian or act like a vegetarian. Like vegetarians do not overthink like, oh, am I going to hurt the feelings because I'm getting salad and not the ribs? Am I going to explain it weird? Am I going to like get all careful about how? No, I just don't eat meat. It's not aligned with my lifestyle, my values. Like it's not a big deal, right? And I think we need to learn how to wear it with more pride because that gives other people the opportunity to question their own relationship. You know, if I saw someone 7 years ago at a party having a good time and not drinking, my mind would have been blown. I would have been like, wait a minute, you're allowed to do that? Because I didn't think you're allowed to do that.
Yes. It's funny. It reminds me, when I was straight out of high school, I used to go to these raves with my friends and everybody was partaking in lots of things and I wasn't. And I just had never done anything like that before. And I just was like kind of the designated driver. I wanted to go dancing, but I didn't care to partake in the other stuff. And I remember this guy, I started talking to him and he was like, whoa. And oh yeah. And I was like dancing. And he's like, so what are you doing? And I was like, nothing. He's like, nothing. Like he couldn't believe that I was just stone cold sober, still having a good time. And I have now realized 20 something years later that I can still participate in fun things and have a great time just drinking club soda and lime. Another thing though, that I've realized too, is when the socializing happened, because all of my friends, like my whole entire culture, even at work, is revolved around drinking. I didn't even realize it until I stopped and was, you know, started my sober curious journey. But it is okay to go and to just have like a mocktail. And sooner or later, like nobody even cares. Nobody even is noticing. And the people that do notice and have start like really asking questions, for me, I've noticed, are people that are also sober curious.
Yep.
Do you agree?
Absolutely. They're either sober curious and they're interested and like, you know, having positive questions because they're trying to relate to your experience and see if they fit in. And if they are ever negative, it's also a sign that they're just threatened. And probably even like that guy at the rave, like actually deep down jealous. Like, wouldn't you feel jealous of someone who can tap into their natural confidence and to just dance like a wild woman without any drugs? Like that's incredible. Right. And so it always is actually, you know, no matter what response you get from people, it's probably just showing what's going on in their mind, not what's going on with you.
Another thing that I want to make very clear to any listeners, and this is just from my journey, is you don't have to have a problem with alcohol to stop, to be sober curious and to like take an experiment to let it go from your life. Like you don't have to hit a rock bottom. You don't have to be an alcoholic. You don't have to have a drinking problem at all. You could just say, this isn't working for me right now. And I want to see how life is without it for a little while. And that's it.
Absolutely. And to me, like the way I wrote my book and the way I talk about it is like going alcohol free comes with so many gifts and benefits and just like, and this is going to happen. And this is going to happen. Like, I'm so excited. I just want to share it with you. Like it's a good gift I want to give you. And like we said earlier, most people just don't get to experience it because society doesn't really dictate it. If you've never tried it before, you have just no idea, right? So it's like try it, get your apples to oranges comparison, and then you can decide what to do after that, right? Like, you don't have to quit forever. You don't have to be alcohol free if it doesn't serve you. But if you don't even know, you like don't even know what you're missing out on. It's like the opposite of FOMO when you think you can't drink. It's like, no. You don't know how amazing it is to not drink.
Yeah. Just, I mean, like, that's what I tell some of, like, when people ask me, just try it for a little while. And if you decide that, you know, you don't feel different, then go back to drinking. But I have a funny feeling you're not going to feel that way. But you really have to give an extended period of time, like really an extended period of time, because especially in the beginning when my friends, when I was doing Dry January and then I kept going, everybody's like, why? You didn't have a problem drinking. Well, like, you never overdrank. Or, but this is also coming from, I literally could not wait to get to an airport. Like, the best part for me, you used to be flying, was going to the airport bar and then having that, like going to the lounge. And when people would come over, I was the one who had all of the wine. And like, that was what the night consisted of. And I'm such an entertainer, and I still do entertain. I just do it differently now. And I don't care if other people drink, but I'm telling you, if I could take a break, Sabrina Soto, who loves a glass of Cabernet, or loved, it's completely possible. Just try it. Just try it. And if anyone's listening and like they have questions, like please DM me or Carolina. I love answering questions of, because I'm in a different spot too than you are. How long have you been now not drinking?
It's going to be 5 years in February.
That's amazing. Well, wait, was it February? Because you said it, no, you did drink again after Dry January. That's right. Yep. So tell me about that. Tell me about how you took the break and then you reintroduced it and then decided that was it. Yeah. That was it.
So I reintroduced it. You know, I never thought I'd quit forever. Absolutely not. Right. And so I reintroduced it a few social occasions. And the thing is like, it was obvious to me that drinking too much doesn't feel good, right? Like nobody feels good after drinking too much. You have a hangover, you're not feeling good, all this kind of stuff. But I still really romanticized, like, oh, but just the one drink, just the two drinks. And I think that experience is what I did. I had the one or two drinks, and that's where it fell flat. That's where it fell so short. I mean, literally one time I was sitting at a bar and I had a like old fashioned drink. And then we had to leave the bar. We had to go get a taxi and go home. And I just found myself so irritated. I was like, where the hell's the taxi? I have to go to the bathroom. I started picking fights with my husband. And I'm like, holy hell, Carolina, your mood was so high in Dry January. And all of a sudden, you're irritated, frustrated, cranky, picking fights with your husband. To have this hypothesis that alcohol makes you feel better is bunk, right? Like, it just totally soured your mood. And so some of the illusion was really popped around for me that alcohol like meets any of my needs or benefits or has any kind of pleasure component whatsoever, because I could not just relate to the negative consequences later. I could relate to them like in the moment. And so that really changed it for me. Another thing that was really helpful for me too, though, is that really recognizing some of the, like, we kind of started talking about this before we started recording, is that a lot of the things why I like to drink was to kind of show off in a way. Like, I used to love to go to wineries south of the border in Mexico. And to me, it was kind of like, look how worldly I am. I travel, I go to wineries across the, you know, in Mexico, I know my wines, right? It was a way that I proved to the world to be sophisticated. And so I kind of took that need and I was able to like redirect it in all these other creative ways. Like, first of all, I just explored all these new opportunities when I was alcohol free. I started doing things I never did before. I went to writer's workshops. I did paddleboard yoga. I went to the opera. I went to the symphony. I went to the botanical gardens. Like, I just played again and really started figuring out what really makes me happy. Not the artificial buzz we're looking for in a glass. I mean, true organic joy. And secondly, I also started expressing those needs of feeling like sophisticated and worldly in new ways. So first of all, the easiest way I did that is actually with mocktails, like becoming a mocktail connoisseur, learning about all the new alcohol-free drinks out there. It kind of replaced the same need to like know about all the wines. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like, I can just know about all these alcohol-free drinks. It's even more inventive because there's more like creativeness involved, you know, because it's so new and fun. And then I also started doing that by sharing that with people, you know, and I started blogging and I started sharing advice on the internet. And so I completely like lost the illusion that alcohol made me seem like some kind of sophisticated or, you know, worldly person, and tapped into it in so much better ways. And I think that's what I love about helping people, is not just to change to see how they see alcohol, but really get to the root of like, what are we using alcohol for? What do you subconsciously think what needs is it needing for you? And I can say on 3 points that most people have is either to turn down, to relax, yep. to kind of like yep. calm down, to turn up, to have fun, excitement, adventure, variety in their life, or to socialize and bond. And that second one is such a missing part because I can tell you 100%, Sabrina, I was drinking out of boredom. I was bored with my life. That's why I couldn't wait for the week to go by. I couldn't wait for the weekend to have something exciting to look forward to. And my life is just not boring anymore. I changed it.
Right. Yeah. Well, for me, I spoke about this in a podcast like a year and a half ago. Alcohol started becoming almost like a friend of mine. I would put Olivia to bed. I'd start cleaning the house and I'd have a glass of wine that turned into two. And it just became this friend, which seems strange because it's a liquid, but I didn't feel lonely. And there is that buzz you get on the first glass that feels good. And then it starts going away and then you keep chasing it, right? And now I can say, and it's not for everybody, but it just did not serve me anymore. And I'm not saying that I'm never drinking again, or I don't even give myself those parameters because, you know, I just don't like to do that in my own life. But I can tell you that I've seen such huge benefits from getting it out of my life. There is one thing though, I cannot wrap my head around, and I was trying to explain it to you, but this sounds crazy. So I know this sounds crazy. People who are listening are going to be like, what are you talking about? But just hear me out. I feel like, what if I get invited to this like once in a lifetime opportunity? Like Oprah invites me to her private plane and she loves to drink tequila. And she's like, Sabrina, let's drink tequila shots. And I'm like, what? I have to drink tequila shots with Oprah? Like, in those big events, how do you wrap your head around not partaking when it's like a once in a lifetime thing?
Absolutely. And you know, you always have the power of autonomy and decision in any moment, right? Just because we're alcohol free doesn't mean, like you said, you're locked in it forever. And sometimes we like stop action today because we're like fantasizing about these hypotheticals. But what about my trip to France in 6 months, right?
Like, I love that Oprah's inviting me on her private plane. I've never even met the woman in my life.
But you know, like for me, I admire people so much who don't drink, and it's by coincidence. So I find these people, these movers and shakers, Tony Robbins, Gabby Bernstein, Brene Brown, Deepak Chopra, what do they all have in common? They don't drink, right? And when I find someone who is really, really up there with self-improvement and fitness and wellness and personal development and success, and they drink, not like occasionally, but like it's like a core component of their life, I'm kind of like, wait a minute, like something doesn't fit here. This is so off for me. And there's a part of like almost like disintegrity that I feel about that. Cause I'm like, how you can't make this all fit. Like, how do you wake up ready to do all this when you had that piece of the baggage? So there's a part of me that's almost like, I don't know if this is really this like highlight, you know what I mean? Or if it's just like, maybe this is something that person just hasn't resolved yet either. So I know, for example, Oprah does drink, but compared to everything else she has going on in her life, I can't for the life of me figure out why or why she hasn't looked into it. And who knows what her private journey is. You know, there's a lot of celebrities that had wine labels and had the epitome of sophistication, and 3 years later, they come out as sober. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
you never know what will happen, but I just don't
buy it. But it's also like, I was telling you, like there was also a podcast I was listening to, and this guy went to this like club and he was like, they greeted us with champagne and caviar. And I was listening to it and I still romanticize like that moment because I don't even eat caviar. So actually I just realized my own question because I don't eat caviar. So I wouldn't be like, oh, I want that caviar. I'm like, ew, gross. So that is the same thing with the champagne, I guess. It's like when you're not into it and it's out of your subconscious, then it doesn't even compute anymore, I take it.
Absolutely. And you know what I think too? It's like we all want treats and to feel special, right? And so like if I went to a cocktail party and there was a waiter handing out little canapes to everyone and then they ran out by the time they got to me, I would be like, oh my God, I don't get one. Like, where's my canapé? Now, I am not addicted to canapés by any means, right? But we want to feel treated and special and like we have special things. And so I think that's like what that champagne and that caviar functions as, is to meet that need. And what I also think is that we are powerful consumers. And so when it comes to businesses and different experiences, like we have the power to use our voice to help them change like what the consumers are demanding. And the alcohol-free like revolution is exploding. So many more like restaurants and hotels and retreats and just things are offering mocktails to people. So like, why not use it even as an opportunity? Say it's like an airline or a private jet or something to be like, hey, do you have any alcohol-free options? And when they say they don't, be like, look at them. Like they're the ones who have like horns on their head. Like, what are you crazy? Like where I'm a like high class roller here. Where's my mocktail, dude? What are you thinking? This isn't 1999.
It's true. And by the way, anybody who's listening, who's on the Sober Curious journey, there are two non-alcoholic options that I absolutely love. One is Athletic Brewing. Their yellow can, I don't know what it's called. Have you tried their non-alcoholic beer?
The yellow one is, something Dawn Ale. It's like a pale ale, but yeah.
Obviously they're not sponsoring at all or else I can get it right. And the second one is Shirley, their sparkling wine and rosé. It's so good. What are your favorite non-alcoholic options? Because some of them taste horrible.
Yes, yes. And you know what? Even the ones who taste horrible, like I'm have this like such a positive outlook. Like there's so much innovation in this market. Maybe it's not here yet, but there's so much happening that it gets me excited no matter what. I like Wild AF. It's an alcohol-free wine. It's like a dark rosé, like a sparkling rosé. That's really good. And I also love Kin Euphorics, like the
I've tried them.
Yeah, I love it's those.
Good. And honestly, Dessois too. Have you tried Dessois?
Yeah, yeah, that one's really good too. You know, and those are like Dessois is made by Katy Perry. Like Kin Euphorics is made by Bella Hadid. Like this is the new luxury. Like that's what I think we need to do. We need to switch in our minds what we even think of as luxury. To me, this is what having it all looks like because you get to have your drink and your experience and wake up feeling like $1 million. Whereas with the alcohol, you don't.
Okay, I have two more things to explain. I know, I told you I was going to talk forever. You're absolutely right about the wellness space. And when you see people drinking, you're like, what in the world? There is a woman that's very famous in the wellness, like mental health space. I'm not going to call her out because it's just me and I'm trying to be more positive in this year. But she posted this woman like running, you know, that gif of that woman running with a glass of wine down the street. And she was like me on a Friday night. And I couldn't believe it. Cause I'm like, how irresponsible of this woman who is about women empowerment. And also what blows my mind is how much marketing goes into women, the alcohol market, how much it really is marketed to us. That's another story, but I couldn't believe how irresponsible it was. And I think so many people have started leaving comments on the post that she took it down, but you're absolutely right. I do find it strange when I see people in especially mental wellness who also drink heavily because it's the alcohol that kept me, my anxiety through the roof, like through the roof. After I would drink even just a few, I would wake up with this like anxiety. And then I was just like, it's my to-do list. It's like, no girl, it's not your to-do list, you know? And I find that people are becoming more and more open and understanding that there is a correlation between the two.
Absolutely. And you know, I think what it is too, is like, this isn't a judgment like call or statement on anyone, but when you go alcohol-free, you really increase your emotional resilience and your emotional intelligence. Because oftentimes why we're drinking is because we want to combat an uncomfortable emotion. And even if it doesn't look like that on the forefront, it's like, you know what? I'm a little bored this evening. So let me have a glass of wine to have some excitement in my life. So I don't want to sit with my boredom. Or you know what? I was really stressed out today. I just need to zone out. So let me turn it all off instead of feeling the stress with alcohol. So every time we reach for alcohol, it's this Band-Aid. And so when I see people like that, especially it's not like normal people, but really these leaders, right, who are promoting not emotional health, not emotional regulation, not emotional intelligence, not self-care, not, you know, all these tools that we really have in the holistic world to take care of our nervous system and our body and our minds, but this Band-Aid artificial solution, it's like, why not just promote cocaine and heroin? Like, where are we going to stop? You know what I mean? Obviously, there's a socialization that comes to it. There is a popularity aspect that comes with it. Like people like that kind of stuff. So people like do it even more. I mean, who knows? What if that woman doesn't even drink and she's learned that when she posts it on social media, it gets her a lot of stuff. Like that's why it just feels so weird is it just doesn't make sense with all the other things they're teaching, you know?
Another thing that I've realized in my Sober Curious journey is how much more time you have, which to some people, they're like, I don't want more time. I don't like being by myself. But it's not even just about that. I do love being by myself, but it's about waking up in the morning and feeling fresh enough to tackle something new. Like, there were so many times that I've been on vacation, I'm sure you have too, with friends, you overdrink, you said that you were going to do something the next morning. The next morning comes and you're like, oh, I don't want to go to that class. I don't want to take that cooking class. You know, then you cancel it, or you're not doing yoga in the morning, even though you said you would, because you don't feel so good. It's those opportunities that go away when you are drinking, that just giving it a break, you're going to feel so different mentally and physically, that you're going to tackle way more, not just things on your to-do list as a mom or as a coworker or, you know, for work, things that you enjoy, new hobbies that you never would have tried before, new experiences that you would have never tried before. So just try it out for me.
I love it. You know, and for me too, it was like the mental energy I got back, because like, it's not like I was thinking about alcohol necessarily all the time, but I was always in the should I, shouldn't I debate, you know? Yes. Should I go out for drinks tonight? No, I have that presentation tomorrow. Okay, but you were invited. Okay, just go out and go have one, but you never have one. Okay. It was this like mental chatter that was nonstop, or in the morning recriminating myself or making plans not to drink. Like, it was, my mind was consumed with it, really, truly, even though I didn't consider myself a problem drinker in those air quotes, right? Like, even right. Normal people with our normal habits have alcohol taking up a lot of brain space. And so for me, like, my natural creativity, my intuition, my inspiration went up. I could never write as a drinker. Like, I used to write short stories and poems and plays when I was a kid. And then when I started drinking in college, all of it dried up. Completely dried up. And yet I never gave up on this dream of wanting to be a writer. So every New Year's, I'd make these New Year's resolutions. This is the year I write. I write 30 minutes every week. That's my goal. And I would do it for 1 week and then totally give up. I didn't have the determination as a drinker. I didn't have the discipline. It was so much easier to open a bottle of wine than write the next great American novel. So what do you think I went to, right? I didn't have the creativity or the inspiration or the intuition. And all of a sudden I remove alcohol and my writing comes back. Like, I'm like writing voraciously in my journals, and slowly but surely I wrote a book out of it, right? And like, I fulfilled this dream of becoming the author I've always wanted to be. And so like, I joke to myself now, if I wasn't so consumed with like trying to moderate for years, like all the time and energy, I even had a spreadsheet, Sabrina, where I'd list like how many drinks I would drink that week, you know, like just plug them in to try to be under
the healthy. A full Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah. And I'm like, if I didn't waste all that time and energy, I probably could have written 3 books by now. Seriously.
One thing I do want to tell anybody who's listening is, and it might not happen for you, but just in case, and you want to DM me, I do remember the first few months. It was like this amazing feeling. Then like an avalanche of emotions came where I thought I was going crazy. And I realized it was all this like pent up emotion that I always numbed out that came in real strong. And I wish somebody would have told me that that was going to pass. And that was also, I think, part of detoxing. So there may be a part of the journey, if you do want to see how it feels, that you might feel a little frustrated that you are feeling a lot of emotion, but that is totally normal. But how long would you say, for people who are listening, did it take you to really stop thinking about drinking? Like, really, it just doesn't even compute anymore.
Yeah, I would say like, I, you know, once I made the decision to like take a month off or whatever commitment, it was just like you, it's off the table. We're not going to like debate it. So all of a sudden the debate is off, which is so freeing, right? That's why I think it's like maddening to try to drink less versus just taking a break. Like, just take a break.
100%. I mean, amen, sister. Yes. No, right. Just that, especially me, I'm very black and white.
Yeah. Yeah. But then I would say is like, I started leaning into mindset work, especially the second time I took a break in February, quite early on, to just like really start questioning, well, why am I drinking? When did I pick up the belief that it helps me do this? Does it really do that? And started kind of seeing it more of like a objective societal view instead of like my own kind of like personal beliefs. And so I actually became obsessed of like debunking the role of alcohol in my life that second time around. So I was still thinking about it, but it was really empowering. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't need it for this. I actually have so much more fun without it. This and this and this, right? So I was collecting all this evidence to prove that it was just amazing. And what it really did is that the process I walk through in my book and my programs, it completely removed my desires of alcohol, right? So I would say like 2 months, I was like feeling amazing, right? But I was still kind of like that hypothetical, you know, I have a trip here, I have a trip there, I have to drink there.
Oprah's plane.
But then it was this, then it was like, I started doing things that I'd never done before. So I started like, you know, I went to a writer's workshop. I launched a business and a website. I started doing these actions that literally the past version of me would have never in a million years done. And so I was kind of at this crossroads where I was like, I can kind of continue to see what this infinite potential version of me accomplishes in life, or I can go back to what I've always done and stay in my comfort zone. And then when I framed it like that, something just clicked. It's like, Carolina, let's see what's possible. Like, let's keep going down this road. Like, you know, like, what if this is how you achieve all your dreams? Like, what if this is how everything happens? You've already lived this other way for years. You have all the evidence in the world of what it was like. You know it, but you don't know this road. Why don't you just take a chance? And that like sense of possibility of taking a chance is what really got me to commit. You know what I mean? And I say within a few months, like alcohol was out of the picture for me in my mind. But obviously there was a lot of back story, back end, like growing and debating in my mind for years before that. So it wasn't like the snap thing. They often say changing your relationship with alcohol is like an iceberg. Like the very top is the part that like is above the sea. And that's like the behavior, you know what I mean? But the mindset underneath it, it can take a long time to change. But I would say like anyone listening, if you're interested, yes, take a break. That's perfect. But even if you're not ready for that yet, read a book, right? Listen to a podcast, read memoirs, read, just start getting your mind kind of into this information and change the way you see alcohol. Because if you change the way you see alcohol, you can change your desires for it. So it's almost like cigarettes. I used to smoke cigarettes in college. You couldn't pay me to smoke a cigarette today, right?
Yeah.
I have no desire for it. It's not like I can't smoke cigarettes. I don't want to smoke cigarettes. And I feel bad for people who smoke cigarettes.
Yeah. Carolina, I could talk to you for like another hour, but for anyone's listening, Carolina has a podcast called Euphoric AF and, or Euphoric the podcast, right?
Yeah.
And her book is called Euphoric. You can get the book version, but I loved your audio book. It just felt like I was talking, like a friend was talking to me. So I love audiobooks. That's the way I loved listening to it. It's fantastic. Your podcast is so great. And I loved your new direction that you're taking about having more of like the mindset and the manifestation part of it, not just being alcohol free, because I do think they go hand in hand. Please, you could DM Carolina, and I know you can because I did, and that's how I got in touch with her. But you could also DM me, and I'm no at all, like I'm not an expert in the field. I'm just the girl next door that happens to be on the same journey with you. So DM either of us with questions, and I'll probably refer you back to Carolina anyway. And the information for her will be on her notes. What else? Is there anything else that you're working on that you would like to tell people in your retreats?
Oh yeah, no, exactly that. I host retreats. Our next one's to Bali. I'm planning some for Costa Rica and I think Tulum in the future. So if you're also interested in finding that community and like really not just online people here on social media, but like really that deep connection and really discovering what that deeper purpose is that like the universe is unfolding for you. You know, these retreats are an incredible way to do that. And like I hosted one in Bali last year and the women are like best friends. Like it's incredible. I'm so amazed by them. And I really think that's important is that community and really seeing new aspirational women that you look up to instead of like a lot of our local friends or our friends from high school, we might be the only one who's changing. And, you know, it's kind of can be lonely, right?
Yes. And again, the last thing I'm going to say is you don't have to have a drinking problem. You don't have to be an alcoholic. You don't have to be drunk all the time and slurring. You don't have to be that to take a break. That's it. That's one thing I just need to tell everybody. Thank you so much for your time. I can't believe that we were talking. That was so great. I could have talked to you. You have to be back on again.
Oh, I would love to. And thank you so much for having me. I had so much fun today.